Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Paul Kuharski brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa and Parman Energy. Visit ParmanEnergy.com, your one-stop petroleum solution. And we will go ahead and take your questions for PK, your Titans questions, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The best question will win a $50 Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa gift card. So get those on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Titans taking on the Colts on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. We will get a little bit more into that matchup specifically coming up here in just a few minutes. PK, I do want to start with a story that's on your website, paulkuharski.com. On a recent sit-down you had with Chad Brinker, you know, we've talked a lot about analytics, right? Analytics with the Titans. How do they help the Titans? How do they influence some of the decisions the Titans have, whether that's via the draft, in free agency? And we all know the Titans, a little bit late to the game, getting into the analytics discussion in the National Football League. Wasn't until a few years ago where they really got into that.
2001, John Robinson finally hired an analytics guy.
21,
he was
low
ranking. Yeah, 21, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 3 years ago where they really got into that. So, you know, not to give away the entire story at paulkuharski.com, but give us kind of a general sense of what you've put up on your website and your sit down with Chad Brinker.
Well, you know, Brinker talked about, you know, the mounds of data that they and every team have, and his determination to determine, you know, what they do with it and how they can make it drive value. And that being, you know, what questions do you ask of it and how do you make it effective for you in coaching, in sports science, in personnel, and with the cap.
Yep.
You know, and so this story goes into, you know, who the people are that are using it, what kind of things they do with it, how it kind of ties together, because the eight people really that they have are cross-departmental and, you know, work together. So they've got somebody in analytics who works with somebody in strength and conditioning who, you know, work together with somebody that's in medical that all tie together to kind of help on return to play based on testing that they've done of guys when they're healthy.
Yeah.
Looking at the testing when guys trying to work towards coming back from injury. So they're using data in terms of that. They're using salary cap data to look at how an opponent's built. I don't know that they're applying that to a game plan, certainly not. But Brinker is learning about an opponent in terms of how that opponent's built, in terms of how it spends cash, and maybe learning about them as compared to the Titans.
Yep.
That he could apply later or see, like, hey, the way they're spending and what they're getting out of their team is or isn't working for them, and we can learn from that. You learn a lot here about the two guys that have Brian Callahan's ear during a game in terms of what they're able to tell him about a weekly meeting they have where they go over scenarios throughout the league. One guy's job is just to scour the league for tricky situations that have come up. Did they do the right thing? Given the circumstances of their timeouts and down and distance and all of that, what would we do? What should we do?
Right.
All of that kind of stuff. They're looking very closely at that. Vrabel did that too, but you know, it was kind of him and Stretch, and they're doing more. And involving more people. And I think the one big example that he gave me, or it's not a big example, but it's a tangible example, was about hand size and the ability to catch a football. You know, the scouting instinct is, he said, when you watch a guy drop a football in scouting, a receiver, scouts will look at each other and say, well, he's got small hands. You know, that's the way the guy, why the guy drops balls. But when they went and ran the data on that, they found that it doesn't necessarily correlate. So I think you would see, like, if you're tracking the draft and seeing, oh, are the Titans going to avoid this receiver because he's got small hands? They're probably not going to avoid that. If they wind up avoiding him, it's going to be over something else, because their data has shown when they went and compared drops to small hands, it didn't correlate.
Yeah.
And so there's a showing, like, what they can – the dives they can do with these numbers. And so instead of just concluding based on scouting history that we see, oh, that guy he's dropping more balls because he has short hands, they're putting the numbers to it. So I think there's a lot to glean from this story, which is probably one of the longest things I've written at the site, and it's up now.
Again, you can find that at paulkuharski.com. These things are always fascinating to me, really regardless of the sport you're talking about, but, you know, specifically now with football, because I think some people view it as, oh, well, good, they got somebody that's looking at a chart and then making every decision the Titans have based on what the chart tells them to do, and that's what they do. And that's not really what analytics is. Like, analytics, all it really is when it boils down to it, PK, is you're trying to gather as much information as humanly possible to inform your decisions. That's what it is.
And you use the word informed. That's important. He calls it data-informed, not data-driven.
Right.
Human decisions that are informed by data, not driven by data.
And that's the way I want it. Like, I don't want my organization – making every decision just totally based on what the analytics tell you. I do think in football sometimes there's a human feel to it that you've got to let influence your decision every now and then. Like sometimes, an in-game situation is a perfect example. Sometimes you get to fourth and three and the chart tells you, hey, it's a good time to go for it. And then you look at what your offense has been doing all day and it's like, yeah, no, it's not. You got to alternate. But I think having as much information as you can possibly have and learning how to efficiently use that information to influence your decisions, that's a good thing. And I think the Titans are finally starting to catch up to the rest of the league in that.
Yeah, and another example, he said, you know, they've worked a long time on putting together, like, their major database. And this maybe sounds primitive to a lot of people. You would presume that they would have this. They did not, which shows you where they are. They now, on their computers or on their phones, and it's not prettied up yet. That's the finishing touch. But if you want to look up a guy, you can find everything about the guy on one page, you know. And it's got analytics grade embedded there along with the scouting grade, say, of a free agent or of a draft prospect. So he said, you know, if the analytics grade and the scouting grade don't match up, then they say, well, let's go look at this guy again and see why these two things don't. Like the math and the scouting, the computer and the human elements don't
align.
Yeah. And so they'll spend extra time looking at that guy to see why not. And the human element may well overrule the, you know, it may stay that way, but they'll figure out why it's that way, which makes complete sense to me, I would think, to most people. So, you know, anti-analytics people, I don't think, are going to find anything very objectionable in what they're doing here. And he said all of it is, does it help us win on Sundays? If it doesn't have a practical application for what it can do for them ultimately to win on Sundays, they're not going to do it.
Well, Ed on the text line asking, is there a fear analytics will ruin the game like it has in baseball? I think it's just that football is a different way of doing it than baseball is. And what I mean by that is, like, I think there's more chaos in football that's just really hard to predict analytically, right?
Control.
Like,
you can't,
it's less
shift,
controlled.
And you can't go to the true outcomes
right.
You know, I don't, and we're too far along. I think if analytics could ruin the game, it would have done it already, because some of these teams have been doing this for a very, very long time. So I think the answer to that is no. And again, they'll only be, they won't be driven by it. They'll be influenced by it, and they can only be influenced by it so much. You know, I think Stilley makes fun of Brinker's cancer cure machine or whatever it is. I think now this is a very long read for Stilley. He'll probably need to break it down into four or five sessions, and there might be some big words. But you know, I think if he gives us a chance, it would explain some of the injury stuff.
Well, if it, also if I'm a Titans fan, you know, and you're using this information, it's a part also of player acquisition. Like, you're using it when you're drafting, when you're signing free agents. And I look at what they've done to this point, and we're going to get a little bit more into Sweat and Latham here in just a second. But, like, right now, those are your first two picks from the draft. Both of them look really good to me. Like, Latham looks like he's got a chance to be a foundational-type player at left tackle. Sweat. Yeah. I thought was outstanding last time out against the Dolphins. We'll see how that continues to progress. And, you know, if he continues to, you know, do all the things he's supposed to be doing both on and off the field. But right now, both those things look really good, right? Like, they went out and got Snead. I think Snead's been good to this point. Now, Woozy has not been able to be on the field. Ridley, they need more from. But, you know, you're not going to hit on every person that you bring into your organization. But if the more information you have leads to smarter decisions – in player acquisitions, ultimately your roster is going to be better over the long haul, if that's the case.
Yes. And, you know, on the injury projection front, you know, he's saying, like, his reports on a potential free agent will be, you know, this guy will miss 2 to 4 games, is our projection. So they're factoring in an expectation of something like that. You know, and they've got a very thorough model of predicting for the draft. Now, how much did it help them with Sweat and Latham? I don't know. But it's some level of a factor there.
Yeah.
And those two and Brownlee have been very good.
615.
The rest, you know, so far not much.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the analytics that we've discussed with the Titans. More coming up on the Titans versus the Colts on Sunday as well. And again, taking your questions for PK, the best question that we determine at the end of all this will win a $50 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's Nashville this Sunday for the pregame show, 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans' Week 6 matchup against the Colts, give you the latest updates before the game. Pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
How about this out of Jets camp?
Oh, boy.
This is from Connor Hughes, primary Jets reporter. He says, and this is from sources, that, and I missed this, Saleh was never going to fire Nathaniel Hackett. However, he was going to demote his game day responsibilities this week.
Mm.
He made the decision to give play calling to Todd Downing.
Oh, God.
Nick moaning in the background. Made the decision to give play calling to Todd Downing because of the continued issues on offense. He made that final decision Tuesday morning. Then, roughly 5 minutes later, he was called into Woody Johnson's office and fired. Based off of Jeff Ulbrich's press conference, it sounds very much like he, too, is considering giving play calling to Downing. The Jets expressed concern with Hackett this offseason in their attempts to add Arthur Smith as senior advisor. He would have been the lead offensive voice. However, he took the Steelers' offensive coordinator job instead. So, old coach or new, the Jets offense is in such shaky shape that they are thinking that Todd Downing is the answer.
Aaron, we're going to have Todd Downing calling the plays. And then 5 minutes later, the coach gets fired. That's
Connor
unbelievable.
Hughes is on SNY TV covering the Jets and the Giants. That is
That's
really, really, really something.
5 minutes after, hey, you know, I think.
Well, that, I mean, that didn't even reach. I mean, Woody Johnson couldn't have known that.
I mean, they acted really fast.
And his replacement is going to do it.
You know, I think that's a good idea. Let's get Ty Downing in there calling the plays. That'll be good. Oh, boy. That place is something else. Hey, but I mean, that further even sets the stage for Vrabel.
What if Todd Downing does well with
it? Just lights it up.
What if in 6 weeks Rodgers is on McAfee saying, Todd Downing has resurrected my career and we're going to the Super Bowl, baby, because Downing has just, things are clicking.
I have never been around a play caller as dialed in as Todd Downing. Just want everybody to know that. My goodness.
God bless you, Todd. Good luck.
Hope everything goes well. That does not speak well of Nathaniel Hackett, but hope everything goes well with Todd Downing. Alex on the text line says the anti-analytics people always treat it if it's used to predict the outcome, when in reality it's used to show what the most likely outcome is based on the results of what has happened in the past.
And that's a very specific game-related analytics element.
Correct. Santa in Portland, what is Paul's opinion on how Rand spent his available dollars to improve the team from the end of last season to today? What might Paul have done differently, if anything? This is from Santa in Portland on the text line.
On paper, you know, it looks good. In practice so far, in execution, it has not been as good. You know, part of that's that Calvin Ridley dropped a couple balls. Part of that, as we discussed yesterday, is that they're failing to throw the ball to Calvin Ridley with the regularity that they need to get the yardage out of Calvin Ridley that befits a guy who got $50 million guaranteed. Part of that is that Cushenberry hasn't picked up on the Bill Callahan system as quickly as you would like.
Yep.
Part of that's that Awuzie has missed time. So a part of that is that these guys that we got all excited about in training camp, you know, Jalen Harrell was going to make a contribution on the edge. Well, Jalen Harrell is a seventh-round pick who's doing what seventh-round picks do, marinating, you know, and is a project for next year. What was the second part of that? What would I?
Is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, listen, the thing is, if I would have done something differently, you know, I don't have a name in mind. I would have liked them to have made a move at edge. All right?
Yeah.
In hindsight, I thought that NPF would turn out okay. You know, but if you made a move at edge, then you have to take away a move somewhere else. If you made a move at right tackle, which would have been what? Your third or fourth significant move on the offensive line, you would have had to take a move away somewhere else. So take away a Woozy, and then you're one thinner, then Brownlee's a starter, you know, and then you suffer an injury in the secondary, and then you're back to Trey Avery.
Yep.
You know, and so, but then you're firmer maybe at right tackle, or you have a better third edge guy with Landry and Key. I don't think you can say, well, they should have also done something at the edge and they should have also done something at right tackle. You cannot solve every problem this team had in one offseason. It's pretty impressive if you tick through the depth chart at how many, I think they have 16 new guys at their 24 main positions, adding in nickel and third wide receiver or second tight end. That's an immense amount of turnover. I think it's unfair to say, well, they should have done this and this and this also.
Chase on the text line. PK, if you're Callahan, what are you going to do to make life easier for Levis? Slow the game down. Is it more wide receiver screens, tight end screens, short pick plays? you got to start getting more yards after catch and less reads for Will Levis. This is from Chase.
I think they're screening pretty frequently, and I think teams know that they're screening pretty frequently, and I think some teams have done well to cut down their screens. So I think you need to throw more downfield to make them, you know, not
rethink
sit
that.
On your screens. I don't know that we've seen too many pick plays and the like. That might be helpful. I think you need to call some stuff that's intermediary to deep for Ridley, and you've got to get protection there, or max protect where you're sending him on stuff and counting on him to beat the coverage that he faces, even some potential double team stuff. He said at the beginning there's scheme for everything.
Yep.
Let's see scheme that gets you some more chunk plays with your primary guy that energizes your offense and that gets production out of your big ticket guy.
I got one texter says, you can't solve everything in one offseason, as if the Texans didn't just do that. The Texans had a left tackle in place. The Texans had Nico Collins in place. Like, to act like they went from ground zero to where they are now in one offseason last year is not accurate. Now, they did get C.J. Stroud, and when you get the quarterback, things accelerate in a hurry in the National Football League. They did bring in Dalton Schultz, who played well for them last year. Like, they made some additions that played really well for them last year, but to act like that there wasn't already something in place, and quite frankly, they had players there that were better than we thought they were heading into last season, then ended up flourishing under Bobby Slowick last year. They had some pieces in place. It wasn't like they went from absolute zero to what we saw last year. Now, the quarterback accelerates a lot of it. I understand that.
You know, that's very, very well said. And look, their process is fast, right? All of what you said is true. It's more of a 2-year thing than a 1-year thing, and but some places in their 2-year thing it goes fast. Some places have a 1-year thing that goes fast. We're not saying the Titans are on the pace that they could have been on,
right?
By any means, but not every place that has a turnaround goes like Houston's turnaround's gone, and most of the places that have a turnaround like Houston's have a miracle quarterback.
Well, there's a glaring hole for the Titans' future as well. That's not the quarterback position that I'm going to get to a little bit later at 7:45 as well. But, like, you know, when you do find the quarterback, we know that that's the biggest accelerator in the league. Like, Stroud came in and it was immediately awesome. So when that happens, that takes you from step 2 to step 6 almost immediately when you have that at the quarterback spot.
Absolutely. And the Titans do not have that.
No. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Titans. Look ahead to the Titans and the Colts coming up on Sunday as well. All that next, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. We're taking your questions for PK on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. PK, the Colts coming up on Sunday. Big game for the Titans. Titans, if you win this game, you get to 2-3. And while that's not the most exciting thing in the world, 2-3, it does, at least for the moment, get you back in the discussion as to what can be for this team as they move ahead here. Now, we all know they've got Buffalo and Detroit coming up right after that. It is hard to envision the Titans winning either one of those games. So we very well could be looking at a best-case scenario right now through 7 weeks of game action where they're 2-5. I have no idea. But in the meantime, you do have it this week. It's a big game. We know that they're guaranteed one more big game this year when they're taking on the Colts. What do you make just on the surface of this matchup for the Titans against Indianapolis coming up on Sunday?
Well, get to 2-3 and take your chances. Richardson with the oblique. You said you thought he was pretty close last week. 16.8 yards completion, if I'm reading his stuff right. I mean, he's very dynamic, but he's got 6 picks. So, you know, there's trouble to be had. 6.7 yards of rush. You know, he's going to be trouble. But he's mistake prone. Let me double check this 16.8 yards per pass completed. I mean, that can't be right. I'm reading that wrong. 60.2 rating. So, I mean, he's four sacks. He's a hit or miss guy.
Yep.
Flacco far steadier, hasn't thrown a pick. You know what you're going to get out of him. He's dangerous. Taylor also has been dealing with injuries. And the Titans feel like when they stop the run, all is well. That's not always always the case. But if you can be 1-0 in the division, that's another thing that would be forward progress. And the Colts have already played some division games. This will get them through one cycle of division play. And they've lost to Houston on opening day, if I'm not mistaken, and they just lost at Jacksonville. So, they lost to Houston 29-27, and they lost to Jacksonville 37-25.
Yep.
If they lose this game, you're both 2-3, and you've got a huge leg up on them in having won a head-to-head, and they've lost to the two other division teams, and you haven't played those teams.
Right.
So I think you can come out of this feeling really good about yourself while you're bracing for those two games that you talk about. Fans more so in a way than the team would be. You know, then you go to Buffalo and, you know, conceivably if you stole that game and got to 3-3, you'd really be feeling terrific. But this is a very winnable game, I think. I don't think much of the Colts personnel wise, and I think the matchup is decent here for the offense to start to do some things. The Titans offensive line has been a problem, and they've faced a lot of good fronts. This front is not that kind of front. DeForest Buckner's on IR. Kwity Paye didn't play last week with a quad problem, and he's not even, you know, a great guy. Grover Stewart, good, but hasn't turned into quite the player that it seemed like he could a couple of years ago when he was ragdolling the Titans. And there certainly isn't the wave of depth like Green Bay threw at the Titans up front. I would think the offensive line's got a better chance of pass protecting in this game, and that Will Levis has a better chance of having some time.
This is a game where you need to see something from the offense. You need to see a demonstrated step forward from the offense. And I think that's both in the running game and the passing game. This is a Colts team that has been vulnerable to the run all year long. This is a game the Titans need to be able to run the football. But to your point, I think it's also a game where they should be able to protect the quarterback to a reasonable level. And, you know, I don't know that I'm ever going to feel good about the Titans as currently constructed, dropping back 30 times and just chucking it around the yard and being able to keep Will Levis totally clean the whole time. But in terms of the fronts that they've seen to this point, this should be a front where the offense moves the football. You know, Indy's a 1.5-point favorite on the FanDuel Sportsbook. I don't think that the Titans are, like, clearly the better team than Indy is. But I do think, to your point, this is a winnable game. And this is a game where you need to see progress from Brian Callahan, Will Levis, and the passing offense. You've had 2 weeks off now here. You know, hopefully his shoulder's ready to go. You mentioned Richardson. We'll see what the injury report looks like on Wednesday. But if it's Richardson versus Levis, like I think most of us expect it to be, this is a game where the offense needs to take a clear step forward. Need to get some production in this game.
And, you know, they'll try to do it by establishing the run. That's a reasonable, but I hope, you know, they don't lose the idea and the commitment to being balanced. In Miami, they didn't need to be balanced because they could be run dominant in terms of run volume and in terms of controlling that game.
Yeah.
I don't know that they'll be able to do that in this game. I think they can run and be balanced. I think that's what we want to see. Let's see a well-rounded offensive game. where you can run and be balanced. You also pass to set up the run a little bit. You know, it can go both ways here. But I hope it's not a game where every first down is Tony Pollard. And in that offensive line improvement, how about no penalties?
Yeah,
let's see them not be in second and more than 10 in this game, so we don't have to hear about the lack of manageable downs, which has been an issue for them the same way it was an issue for their predecessor.
Jack on the text line, do we prefer Richardson or Flacco in this matchup? I think you prefer Richardson. I'll say this about Richardson. Richardson has the ability to make some unbelievable plays. We've seen it already this year. He's made a couple of throws that are just outrageous. He also will throw you the ball. Like he will throw you the football at least once, probably twice, throughout the course of a game. So I think right now, and first off, Flacco played great last week for them. I think by far, at the moment, if you're the Titans, you would rather see Anthony Richardson if you're trying to win the game.
I agree. You probably give up something that hurts, but you probably get something that offsets it. And at the very least, you get a wash. Hopefully, you get more than a wash. I'm not an Anthony Richardson guy. I think he's still so inexperienced. I mean, came into the league having played, 17 games. Very much like a rookie,
yep.
Despite whatever numbers next to his name on the roster and all of that. I think he's just too unpredictable to run. He's too unpredictable to run my offense. And they're probably. I mean, they're saying the same thing about Levis. They're loving the idea of Levis. They're thinking that he's going to make mistakes that kill the Titans and help the Colts. And they're not looking at the other side of that and saying, but he's going to make some throws that kill us. So, they'll take their chances with that. And Levis needs to get to a point where he's making big plays that offset his mistakes. And we're talking a lot about him minimizing the mistakes and maybe not enough about where are the plays to offset the mistakes. I'm going to ask some questions about that today.
I got a question on the text line. How do you get more from the tight end position? That's really who could open up the intermediate part of the field. They've got just 19 catches through four games as a group.
It's just not a tight end offense, I think. It's a three-wide offense. So if you want more from the tight end position, you got to have less from Boyd, I think.
Well, also, how good are the Titans' tight ends?
Yeah.
That's another question.
I mean, Chig is not a favored guy in this offense. Wiley is more. I think it's a, sneak one there, here and there. Here's the thing to me. A lot of people, and I'm guilty of this as well. My pet peeve is really snaps in terms of Burks. I want Burks on the field less because I think he's not threatening. Not that NWI is some major threat, but I think he's a reliable guy. But I think we need to stop saying, like, how do we get the ball to this guy and how do we get the ball to that guy and how do they get the ball to this guy? And focus more on a narrower group. Get the ball to your primary guys. And who are your primary guys? Ridley, number one.
Yep.
Hopkins, number two. Who do we want, number three? Pollard, to me, as handoffs for sure and some pass touches. They talked a lot about throwing to the running backs. We're seeing it, but it's not that effective. So yep. More effective throws to the running back. Who's your fourth?
I'd go Spears, and then I'd go Boyd five. That would be how I would order it.
All right, so let's order it that way, and let's not emphasize four and five. Let's really go top heavy. So I don't want to worry about the throws to the tight end. The throws to the tight end are to keep things honest, or because you're doing so much with these top three that the guys at the end are being forgotten about coverage-wise, and, oh, there's Nick Vinette wide open on this play. We can throw a touchdown there or a 20-yarder. To Chig or Wiley or Vinette. But I think most people would be in agreement with that. Like, let's see them establish, and I'm not saying it in terms of, like, royalty or pedigree or anything like that. I'm saying it in terms of danger. Calvin Ridley is the fastest guy on the team. Calvin Ridley is the fastest guy they've had in a long time. He's threatening and dangerous. Therefore, have him run threatening and dangerous routes and get the ball in his hand.
Yep.
DeAndre Hopkins has a knack for getting open. Use the knack for getting open and have Will Levis, who's proven that he can get him the ball, get him the ball. Pollard and Spears are shifty. Now, you've got to do certain things that open up the screen game or the running back passing game. But once you do those things, give them some chances in space with the ball. Boyd, you know, let him convert third and four with his back, with his facing the quarterback with a five-yard pass. Repeat.
Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't seen anywhere near enough of that throughout the first 4 weeks. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Vols with him. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
The leash is unbelievably short with me on him right now. It's not just the lack of production that we've seen from him when they've been in there. It's the same things that continue to happen time and time and time again. I mean, we've seen it the last 2 years, what that looks like. You're not making the playoffs with that level of offensive line.
It's raining. It's raining. It's awful out here.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program, either the Rex Rant or the Rob Rant. You know, we would talk a lot about the Titans this hour, PK. Obviously, quarterback is the main point of emphasis organizationally as they move forward that they got to get figured out, whether that's Will Levis or elsewhere. So we would all agree with that. Putting that part of the conversation aside, I'm looking around the rest of the division, really the rest of the league, but certainly the rest of the division right now, and really asking the question, how far away are the Titans? How far away are the Titans from being legitimate contenders and competitors in this division, in this conference? You know, we went through the Houston example of how quickly things changed for them, and they had some pieces in place, whether that's Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, Nico Collins at wide receiver, which I'm going to talk about that here in just a few minutes. But certainly Stroud comes in, and that's the accelerator. And you get a new coach on top of that, and D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick at offensive coordinator, and everything seems to be going really well for them. I'm looking around this division right now, and I look at Jacksonville with as poorly as they've started. I look at the skill positions, and I say, man, Brian Thomas, who they drafted in the first round this year at wide receiver, he is on pace for 1,350 yards and 10 touchdowns in his rookie season. That's a heck of a rookie season for Brian Thomas. I look at Houston and Nico Collins, and I know it took Nico Collins some time to get going, but right now through five games, that dude's got 32 catches for 567 yards, three touchdowns, coming off a year last year where he had 1,300 yards on 80 catches and was awesome in that offense. I look at Indy, and it's a little bit less the case with Indy, but you do have Adonai Mitchell, who you drafted. You got Josh Downs, two young guys there that have made some plays in this offense. And then I look at the Titans on the offensive side of the ball at the skill position, and I say, there's nobody there that's a young, bona fide playmaker with the exception of Tajay Spears. And right now, Tajay Spears isn't even the starting running back. Now, I know he plays a lot. I know he plays an important role in the offense. But I look at this and I say, continuing to build out this offense beyond the obvious at quarterback, which is the priority of what they've got to get figured out. They don't have that young guy. They don't have that young threat, certainly at the wide receiver position. And I'm not sitting here trying to pile on Treylon Burks because, quite frankly, the Burks conversation just is what it is at this point. I'm with you. I'd like to see him on the field less, and he's not going to be a part of this team next year. He's just not. So that part of it is what it is. But they do not have one of those guys. There is no Nico Collins. There is no Brian Thomas. And, like, to me, for them to take that next step and to be a part of that group moving forward where they are legitimate contenders, yes, they have to figure out quarterback. but they need an up-and-coming young playmaker that right now they just don't have. And when you stack in all the different things that we still believe this team is going to need at the end of the year, right tackle being among those things, we'll see how the rest of the line continues to come together. Like right now, I still think they need like one or two at least young receivers that they're going to have to go find in the draft. So that's a long way of me saying it is very disappointing to look around the rest of this division right now and really the rest of the conference and identifying how many young dynamic playmakers there are at some of the skill positions. And then you look at the Titans and they really don't have one. And I think it's crucial to have those guys in today's NFL.
Well, this receiving core is a one-year deal.
Yes.
Tyler Boyd is a one-year deal. DeAndre Hopkins' deal is up. And absolutely, they need a young receiver to be part of the mix. And so the three big clear needs for this team next year, right tackle, edge rusher, wide receiver. And that tackle needs to come later. It needs to come later. They spend so much draft capital on offensive linemen. Now, I know times have changed. Times have changed from when they found, you know, Benji Olsen later and Zach Piller later.
Yep.
And that the quality of offensive linemen coming into the league is not comparable to then. David Stewart later. But with Bill Callahan on board, one of the things they need to be able to do is find offensive line contributors outside of the first and second round. Especially when the other positions you need, and they could argue, you know, well, look, receivers, where was Thomas drafted by the Jaguars?
I think low 20s, I think, maybe late teens.
Yeah. I mean, every draft is going to be a good receiver draft from now till the end of the horizon that we can see based on how football is going. But a lot of these receivers are also, you know, top guys. And the pass rushers are top guys. And you got to prioritize. And it's been a while since receiver. I mean, Burks was a while ago, but Burks is a bust in terms of living up to
There's no doubt.
His draft status. And if you're ranking those three on the impact they can have on this football team and on the necessity based on where they've been picking people, well, it's been a long time since they did an edge guy. Harold Landry was 2018. But I'd say receiver and edge are right there, and offensive line obviously has been frequent. So you got to put that offensive lineman as important as he is and say, we've got to find him later. And put those other two higher. And I would say the first two needs of this team are a dynamic playmaking wide receiver, and you might put that highest
yep.
because he's touching the ball. And an edge rusher who can cause some havoc are the top two for me. And not that this right tackle isn't very important, but again, this is a team with three really big needs
yep.
heading into next year. And maybe you can do damage at one of those positions in free agency, though those are three very high value positions, so they don't generally get to free agency unless a team just simply has cap problems and can't afford to retain a guy, or B, something's wrong with them.
No doubt. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us coming up next. We'll look ahead to Tennessee and Florida coming up with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.